Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 14, episode 1 of Das Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
January 16th, 2018, my name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Little Diddy about Jack O'Brien.
Whoa.
Courtesy of Andrew Thomas. And I am joined by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
I don't know what to say since you sang, but because of the events of the weekend, I'm going to have to say it's in your head. Zom Gray, Zom Gray, Zom Gray. Oh. Thank you.
Oh, I thought that was going to keep going.
No, no, that was for the homie, Dolores O'Riordan.
I know.
Rest in peace. Died suddenly, very tragically. And if you were anybody who was conscious in the 90s, there's no way you could say the Cranberries was a bad band because pivotal. They gave us a lot.
They're important to me.
And she is amazing.
Many emotional moments when I was a 13-year-old were had with the Cranberries. And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the hilarious comedian and writer Teresa Lee.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
You guys always have such cool intros and nicknames, and I was trying to think of one, but I couldn't.
Come on, you here, let's...
It's so, there's always a stream of, it's me, I'm the doctor and the of the
right,
lyricist.
Right, right.
And
Braggadocio, yeah.
And I'm just I'm the, ST.
I'm Larissa T. That's your Twitter handle.
I don't have...
Teresa, what's something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
Oh, I recently searched, can you give a cat dog food?
Someone's a good cat.
Can you? That's
well, a good I don't have a cat, full disclaimer, but I have a dog and dog food.
Oh,
and
that's right.
There was a stray cat outside my door, and it was cold and rainy, and the cat was a kitten, and it looked sad. And it kept following me, it wouldn't let me in. So I was like, maybe it's hungry, but I don't have cat food. So
right.
I was like, oh, I have dog food. Can I eat it? And they can't. So...
Oh, they can't eat dog food?
No, but they can eat eggs. So I made the cat eggs, but then she ran away because my dog barked at her.
Aww.
So I think she's fine.
Well, we'll see. Why can't you give a cat dog food?
The internet said you can't. It said it's not digestible for them.
Oh,
I don't
shit.
Think it's processed for them. Have you?
Miles looks like somebody who's been giving cats some dog food.
No, full disclosure, right? So I have two cats and a dog, and... the other day, I make all their food at the same time, and they know it's mm-hmm. it's feeding time. And in a rush, I threw the dog food, the bowl, they all use the same bowl, the same kind of bowl. I put the cat food in front of the dog and the dog food in front of the cat. And I only realized later, or my girlfriend did, and was like, why did you give the cat dog food? I was like, oh shit. And the cat really didn't eat much of it. Mm. So maybe that's why, cause even the cat was like, no, I'm not really fucking with this. Even though it's I have to, I give my dog raw dog food because he has bad allergies. So I thought maybe they would respect it. So now I didn't know.
Maybe if it's raw, it's okay. Also, I feel like your pets are X-Men pets because didn't your dog eat a bunch of chocolate? And
Hey, look, why am I
the
on
chocolate
trial?
Thing is...
And he was fine.
He was fine. Wait, how did you know about that?
My dog has eaten
I know
huge packages of chocolate and been fine. My dog has an iron stomach.
Well, because the thing is, as I read in a panic Google search, it's clearly, the darker the chocolate, the more dangerous. And Baker's chocolate, I think, is the most fatal because it's just milk chocolate and white chocolate.
Brownies
are
really bad. Chocolate cake are really bad. Anything you're baking.
Right.
Baker's chocolate would imply.
Yes.
It's a natural state of it, basically.
Yeah. So we're fine. We're all good pet owners here.
Also, coffee. You shouldn't give them coffee.
Is that toxic?
Yeah. Both babies and dogs, I'm told, is, yeah. All right.
Good to know. For all the parents that were wondering out there, don't give your babies coffee.
My friend has two cats, and my dog, it just exists to eat human food. It does not come off as very intelligent. I brought him to the office a couple times, and
you
guys
you
can attest to the fact that he doesn't come off as a very humanly intelligent dog. He just kind of sits there and snores while he's awake.
Yeah.
And he becomes a genius when it comes to getting food. So I expected this from dogs, but I went over to my friend's house who had cats, and their cat jumped up on the counter and took a whole turkey in its mouth and was like,
right.
And just fucking ate the whole thing.
It was
wild. Crazy.
My
man.
Cats
I had
ate
no
a,
idea.
Tried to eat a loaf of Wonder Bread.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I was like, I heard shit in the kitchen. I look, and they're just eating the plastic on the outside of the loaf. I was like, y'all fucking.
Yeah, I didn't realize. Cats.
Don't ask why I'm buying Wonder Bread.
Cats get down like that. Teresa, what's something that's overrated?
I feel like a lot of people won't agree with me, but I think the movie Lady Bird was all right.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone is raving about it. I watched it pretty early before I saw too much about it, so maybe if I watched it again now, knowing I'm supposed to like it, I'll like it better. But it didn't not like it. It felt very like I've seen this before.
Well, you are somebody from Northern California who went to NYU, right?
Yeah, maybe I related too much to
exactly what the movie is about.
Did you go to Catholic high school too?
I went for 1 year, but I was a brat to my mom, so maybe it struck too close to home.
Right. It's funny because other friends, I haven't seen it yet, but I was just talking with my friend Brittany, who were from California. We did go to a Catholic high school, and she was like, it felt so real to me that she wasn't even like, it was great. She's like, it just felt really real. But yeah. I don't know. So you're saying it's overrated merely because there's a lot of hype, but it doesn't, you're not saying it quite adds up to.
Part of it, yeah, maybe part of it is I'm biased because it's a story I've seen so many times. And now that
I've lived.
Yeah, perhaps it's like that I've seen it in life so many times. But right. I also think by itself, I don't know, the stakes never felt that high. It never felt like it was that original of a story. It's just another coming of age story. It feels like something that I'm like, I enjoyed it in the moment, but in 5 years, I will forget and not care about it.
Right.
Huh. Interesting. What's something that's underrated?
Oh, I love the show, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, I haven't heard too much about it. I think people like it generally, but I feel like it's been, so far, a very enjoyable show that
I like it.
Have been wanting, to, like, my gauge of a good show for me is when I'm done with an episode, even if I don't have time, I'll, like, watch the next one, and I've been doing that, so.
Yeah. It's good. I mean, I think one of the reasons I really like it, too, is I feel like it really captures, like, the psychological struggle of someone doing comedy too, of like getting the requisite confidence to go up on stage and then like working your material, but like straying from the thing that makes you funny and then refinding that. I don't know. There's a lot of, I just found it very watchable and very entertaining, despite the fact that like most of like what the last show Amy Sherman Palladino did, Gilmore Girls, like she writes very privileged characters, like where with people have tremendous.
I like humendous.
Humendous.
Needs
Thank
to
you.
Be a word.
Let's make some t-shirts of that, please. But like these people have tremendous and humongous familial safety nets of like, you know, like in the Gilmore Girls, parents are massively wealthy. Even in this show, parents are quite wealthy. But I don't think that detracts from anything or takes anything away from the show. But, you know, Noah Gardenswartz, former guest, he consults on that show. So, you know, shout out to him because they won a Golden Globe.
To tell people what it's like to be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, like him and Jen Kirkman were consultants, I think, to sort of give their view as stand-ups to the writers. And I think Noah being like, you know, he said what basketball is to your family, like Judaism is to his. Like his grandfather's a legendary rabbi. So I think he was able to give many insights to them. But yeah.
Well, I also think the biggest thing for that show isn't just about – because at first going into it, I was like, I don't like watching shows about stand-ups. But it's not about – just her doing stand-up. Like, the manager, Susie character, is also great. And I feel like that's a side you don't see a lot, and I like their relationship. And I almost feel like more women or people will be interested in going into management from that show, which is cool, because it's not just another, hey, everyone, comedy's great. Be a comedian.
Right.
So
yeah. And she's, like, great of, like, forcing her, like, to the most honest comedy out of her, too, as, like, the manager. Yeah. Good show.
Yeah.
And also like the weird like Lenny Bruce, like he's kind of in there and like just around.
Yeah.
Is the comedy good? Is her comedy?
I laugh.
You like her comedy?
They do a good job of making it realistic where they write it in a way where she's supposed to be funny. You can see that she has raw talent, but she's not like unbelievably good when she starts. Like, she definitely, you know, has, it's very raw.
Right. Cool. Well, I will definitely check that out. That's on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Let's get into the format. We're trying to take a sample of the ideas that are out there changing the world. Talk about pop culture, the news, and just try and take a temperature of the global shared consciousness. And the way we like to open up is by asking our guest, what's a myth? What's something that most people believe to be true that you know to be false or, you know, incorrect, Teresa?
Well, I am a twin, and a lot of people think that when you're twins, it's like having a clone and that you guys are the same and that everything's easier because you can just do, you know, half the work. And it's not true. It's actually much harder because you have to prove that you're separate people all the time.
Right.
Constantly trying to prove your individuality. And yeah, my sister is much more cool than me. She's very talented and cool and tries hard and
cooler than you?
She's like the kind of person who posts like selfies running, but like you don't get mad at her because she's like, blessed day. And you're like,
right.
So she can get away with that. She's a musician, so I feel like they're much more genuine in their craft.
Right, right, right.
But yeah, I actually recently went to a fortune teller in Taiwan, and she went with me to help me translate because I don't speak that great Chinese. And they told me like all this stuff about my relationships that's like not great. And then at the end, we were like, well, is it the same because we're twins? And the fortune teller was like, no, actually, you're 2 minutes apart. And she's complete opposite. It seems like she's very lucky in love and constantly getting into good relationships, stable, sturdy.
Yeah, you leave, you're like, I want to go see another psychic.
But the thing is, the fortune teller was right.
So yeah, right, right.
I thought she was going to be like, you're the same. And I would be like, aha, gotcha.
Right, right. She read you.
We look the same. It's she's so, like, no, actually.
That's funny because at one time, I thought I saw Teresa and I think it was her sister in a parking lot at my old job when I called like Rosie. I was like, yo, I think I saw Teresa. And then you were like, that might have been my sister. And I had no idea, the twin. And I was like, that makes sense. I probably saw the twin.
Did your sister live in town?
She did, but she moved to Taiwan a few months ago. At that time she was.
Yeah, right. This was like a year ago probably.
Mm-hmm. Right. Is that hard being apart? Like, because you guys can feel each other's pain and stuff.
Right. Yeah, I'm constantly. That's why I'm like sleepwalking because she's sleeping right now.
Right. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
And she's having the craziest dream. She's like, were you on a podcast? I had that dream.
All right, let's get into stories. We had a quasi-crisis over the weekend in Hawaii, in our westernmost state. I guess I guess Alaska is our westernmost state.
Is it?
I think so, yeah. But Hawaii is way out there. And
far out.
Far out, hell man. Yeah. And, you know, just surfing, hanging loose. And they got an alert at around 8 a.m., that said a ballistic missile was incoming and, seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill, which is...
Whoops.
It was a mistake, as people probably know by now, due to the fact that we're not in a nuclear war.
Nuclear.
But yeah, it was, I don't know, for 38 minutes, everybody was, Miles, you said you know some people who live in Hawaii and they were just
yeah,
like,
my girlfriend's college roommate is from Hawaii and lives out there. And like, she was saying like, it was wild. Like they were calling each other being like, hey, like if we don't make it, like I love you. Like really people were forced to examine their mortality, like in those 38 minutes. And like her friend's sister lives in the mainland and is the only one that is on the mainland right now. So she was out there. Her parents were calling her like, hey, the missile might come. And like her sister was like having a meltdown too because she thought everybody in her family was just about to be like, who knows what was going to happen. Sounds like a very traumatic situation for people who are involved. All because it was a mistake and we have outdated software to, you know, sort of moderate all this kind of stuff.
Right. And I mean, I guess people could have figured out that it was a mistake when they weren't dead after 5 minutes, which is apparently how long it would take for the missile to get from North Korea.
That's how long? 5 minutes?
Hawaii.
Five?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So you'd have 5 minutes.
Woo!
So really use that phone call, that first phone call carefully.
Yeah.
It's a crazy story. This is something that we covered a lot back at Cracked, how many times during the Cold War there were just these near misses where, you know, one like glitch would happen. They'd leave a tape in sort of the NORAD, like the big defense room that like you've seen in movies where it's like all these screens and stuff. They once left a tape in there that was a drill for a nuclear attack. And they actually like had the president like up in the air and everybody was freaking out and like getting ready to launch weapons. There's this story about Stanislav Petrov, this guy in Russia who, you know, was the guy who was in charge of if there was a missile incoming, he was to like call the command and say, launch an attack on the United States. He saw one missile and he was like, all right, that could be a glitch. And then like 12 missiles followed like exactly in the formation that you would expect coming from the United States, and for whatever reason, he just decided, like, okay, I'm not going to end the world. I feel like this doesn't feel quite right, and he was right. It was like a sun glare or something like that. But they...
Wait, what? A sun glare looked like 12 missiles?
Yeah, it like fucked with the...
like the satellites that were like
radar or whatever.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but he basically saved the world by not doing his job, by failing to do his job. Yeah.
Could you imagine if like we reacted to this in the wrong way?
Right.
Like, it's like, oh shit, well, I guess it's going off. And then...
Oh no.
Because yeah, it happened in Japan too.
Right.
Like on Sunday.
Right.
Or I think, yeah, or maybe tomorrow. The timeline is kind of weird. But anyway, yeah, I think it was Sunday or maybe Monday. Anyway, in Japan, that it was another fake warning of like, hey, seek shelter. But they got like the just kidding alert out like within a couple minutes. So it wasn't a full blown like 40 minutes of like existential dread like the poor people in Hawaii did. But yeah, the guy who did it, Vern Miyagi, shout out to Mr. Miyagi. He felt terrible about the mistake, which I'm sure he would because after hearing, like, you could see there was, like, a photo of him. He looked, like, really, like, I fucked up so bad. I'm so sorry. But, yeah, when you look at the interface that he was using, it's just, like, literally clicking a link to send one out that's, like, they're not, like, properly organized. I could see how you, if you weren't on your shit, you might accidentally hit that.
Well, no, but, easy on Vern, but, I mean, yeah, the technology is just crazy out of date.
Right.
Surrounding all nuclear weapons and, yeah, it's just the hardware and software. 60 Minutes did a story about it, and you look at it, it's like out of an 80s movie. It looks like an 80s movie, a lot of the technology that they have both guarding and controlling nuclear weapons.
Was he trying to send anything?
He was supposed to do, I think, a test.
A test.
Oh.
He was supposed to do one that says, like, drill.
Right.
You know.
Oh, my God. That's like when you accidentally screenshot a conversation and then send it to the person you're talking to.
Right.
And you're like, no!
Right.
You're like, damn, then, iOS 11 glitch.
Then I just, I'm like, it was a glitch. It was a mistake.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Photoshop.
That happens probably hundreds of thousands of times every day. Like, and yeah, so we shouldn't have technology that makes it possible for people to do that with nuclear weapons.
I mean, how many people you think involved in that, like, took stock of, like, their relationships, too? Like, how many breakups do you think happened after this, like, missile warning?
Right.
Where it was like, yo, honestly, like, in that 38 minutes, I thought, like, of somebody I was really trying to be dating or, like,
right.
The fact that we're kind of done and I still haven't done anything yet. And
right.
You're like, sorry, this is... I took stock of my life in those 30 minutes, and this isn't going to work out. I feel like there has to be something.
People just come clean with, like, deathbed confessions.
Someone needs to option this story already.
Right.
I mean, it's a rom-com for 2018.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and Trump was apparently golfing, so...
Right. And just...
thank God. He's, like,
well, they knew,
doesn't do his job.
They knew within
often.
Minutes, right, that it was a fake thing. They told him, and he was kind of like, all right. You know, you could have tweeted something. A lot of people follow your Twitter, so I'm sure you could have probably put some people at ease. But
right,
they didn't send out a correction, right?
Not just for 38 minutes.
38 minutes it took him to be like, oh, false alarm.
My bad. So yeah, they're now saying that people will know when it's a real one because they'll send a follow up being like, and seriously, we didn't fuck up this time. That this is an actual.
Then you
alert.
Have to enter a CAPTCHA code.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Right, exactly.
Prove you're not a bot. Like, right. What? You're warning me.
Anyways, all right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after these messages. And we're back. So we wanted to talk about the thing that, I don't know, a lot of people around me were talking about.
Everybody.
Benghazi.
Benghazi.
Yeah. Benghazi, question mark. So Aziz Ansari, there was a article written in, was it Babe?
Babe.com, I think.
Babe.com, where somebody described a date with him that was where he acted pretty shittily. And it kind of got lumped in with the Me Too movement, which, you know, there are some debates about whether it should have. So we wanted to talk about that and kind of, this is probably the most controversial of the public sort of interrogations of famous men. And like even the Me Too movement and, you know, people who consider themselves feminists are being divided by this. So I don't know. Where did you guys fall on this?
Ooh, yeah. God, I feel like everything I say, I'm going to get backlash. But I think, first of all, I feel like I'm not defending Aziz. I feel like everything he did, you know, he could have done better for sure. But I do kind of think this article confounds the movement a little bit, because I wouldn't put it in the same category. It doesn't mean she, I think she wasn't the author, the tipper,
Grace,
right. the victim, I guess we call her.
Subject of
the subject
article.
Of the article has every right to share her story, as anybody, you know, can at any time share their story and, you know, whatever line of work she may be in, it doesn't matter. But I do think that this story to me falls under more like dating horror story, which is also a story you can share. But I think putting it in the same category as like Louis C.K. or like Kevin Spacey or, you know, any men who have raped or assaulted in a more, I don't want to be like a more serious sense because, you know, that's subjective, but in a legally more serious sense, I think putting this together is more damaging for the overall movement. Though I do think women should talk to each other. So I think it's good that she is talking about it. I feel that it is taking away from the more serious stories.
Right.
Right. Well, this seems like to be like there are people who believed this means Aziz Ansari is canceled and get rid of him, throw him on the pile with the rest of like the sex crims. And then there are other people who were more feeling like they were more, they were moderates, so to speak, like mm-hmm. within how they felt to approach this. I mean, I think clearly this is an example of how to not treat a woman on a date.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that's very clear. There's no like defending that. And I think, yeah, it's interesting to see how there's begun to be infighting because some people are saying he's done, get rid of him. And other people are like, well, and then it's caused people to turn on each other. And it's become very divisive. I mean, like even like Margaret Atwood got like flamed mm-hmm. Because she was talking about another thing having to do with, you know, like due process. And I think the due process argument has become a thing that people have been. I think that's like the sort of not logical next step in this discussion is clearly the Me Too movement is born out of the fact that the legal system has failed women.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's why there is a need to figure out how to hold people accountable because they can't do that in the legal, like the traditional justice judicial system sense.
Right.
And I think that what this brings up is another conversation around how do we create a system that is just for the victim. Because clearly the way it is now, it's not working.
Right.
And I think that's like another, I guess that's the next step of this conversation. Like for me, getting into like whether or not Aziz should be canceled or whatever, that's like a other more nuanced debate because I don't even know how the fuck we should even talk about
it. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, that like the cancel stuff and the job stuff, that's all going to, and people don't see this when they're blogging, but that all comes down to business. And that's like, you know, business people are going to make their decisions based on what's good for business. So when they cancel something, they do it because they don't think it's good for business. Or maybe they have a moral sense. Who knows? But ultimately, I don't think that's the way to fight sexual assault is just by ruining people's careers. Because what happens if you're faced with someone who doesn't have a career? So I think we need to figure out a better way, like you're saying, justice-wise. But in this case, like, what justice does she want? That's what the part that gets me about the story is, like, she's not really looking for justice. And it's hard because she's not the one writing it, so it's very possible the writer has her own agenda. But to me, it reads like a story where the writer wanted to get involved and maybe take advantage of a time when she knew she could get views on this story. And it didn't feel like it was necessarily helping the woman in the story. It doesn't seem like there's any call to action. Not even really a call for men to be better. It just feels like a juicy, gossipy story, honestly.
Right.
And the part that rang the most, like, off to me was how she describes Aziz as, like, gross when he's just kissing her, not even, like, the sex stuff. And that, to me, reads as, like, I don't want to be, like, because I don't know her and this is secondhand, but seems like if you went on a date with him, like, why would you describe him as a person as gross before any of this stuff happened? It really feels like maybe she wanted a story, wanted to go on this date, and then didn't want it to go that far. He didn't act correctly either.
Right.
So that made it harder for her to just get out of the situation. So I don't think he was right, but I don't think she was a full-on victim here because some of those adjectives just don't match up to me.
Yeah, I mean, she says it took her a while to, you know, come to terms with this as sexual assault. And I don't think it's at all clear to a lot of people that it does necessarily qualify as that. I think people are having an important conversation about consent, or at least I think that should be the main conversation. The main takeaway is, you know, this is not how to behave in a sexual, you know, context. I have heard a lot of, you know, men respond by being like, well, Aziz got railroaded. This is like not fair. And like that's sort of been their reaction. I do think there's an important conversation to have about consent and just the messages people get around consent. One of the stars of The Good Place, Jamil, talked about how, you know, his behavior, or at least some of the behavior described in the story, seemed very like porny, and mm-hmm. that like porn sends men some really incorrect messages about, you know, how a sexual encounter should happen. And you don't even really have to go to porn. You know, the Grease, the when they're talking about like, did she put up a fight, or, you know, the whole Han Solo Princess Leia relationship in Star Wars starts with him like pushing her up against a wall and being like, you like bad boys, and her being like, ah, leave me alone. And, you know, him basically forcing her to, you know, kiss him. And then it's like, ah, that's what she wanted after all. I do think that that's something that men need to talk about more, with each other and with women. And I think there's a good conversation being had here. It's an important conversation to be had here. I don't think people would be having it if she hadn't publicly named who the man was. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think this article would have started that many conversations, right? At the same time, it does seem like I can see how people would think it's unfair to him that this is now something that he's going to be marked with. I would say that I would agree with that sentiment if this is the worst thing that he's ever done and he's, you know, completely innocent in all other contexts. I guess time will tell if that's the case. But yeah, I don't know. I do get how people would see this as being sort of somebody getting railroaded and their career being sort of done away with in a situation where they don't necessarily deserve that.
I mean, I don't feel bad for him, but I think that it's a lot of people aren't examining the other side of consent, which is also, it's never on the woman, you know, because I think if you're in a situation where the guy is totally respectful, there would never ever be a question. If there's any doubt,
right,
he'll just back off, even to the point where he's overcompensating and the woman's like, oh my God, I'm frustrated, like blah, blah, blah. That right. could happen, and that's better than the opposite. But I do think, like, women also can be better about saying what they want. Not that it's ever their full responsibility, because even if they don't say what they want, you know, if the guy is being respectful, it will never get to that point. But just like in light of the climate right now, I don't think it's that, like, in this case, he was an asshole, but he did, every time she said no, stop. And every time she said no, he backed off and even put on his clothes again. Did he start back up again? Yes. So I think that was him being an asshole.
Right. Like almost immediately.
But he gave her opportunities to leave. And I think he did that because he didn't want to put her in that, you know, really extreme situation. Did he know he was pushing it? For sure. I'm sure he knows he's famous, and I'm sure he's done that before to other women and knows they usually are cool with it in the end,
right?
Or whether they are or not, but that's how he feels. So I think, you know, he's being an asshole there, but I don't think he was not giving her a way out. Which is like, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know. It's a discussion, but I think it definitely is a different type of consent, because it's sort of like, he was trying to give her a way to express how she felt, and she never did. And maybe some of that's ingrained as a young woman, not wanting to feel like a bitch and not wanting to,
right,
you know, have someone not like you. So some of that I think we can change earlier on.
Right.
So
I think that's another important conversation about
right.
consent.
Because I think
for sure.
Men have to also look at it like this. I'm sure there are times, like, you know, like you said, and even like with a lot of conversations I had with women this weekend talking about it, they've been like, well, I don't want to just be like, no, stop, shut the fuck up, this is done or whatever, because they may like the person, they just don't want to move that fast, and they don't want to come off, like you said, like as a bitch or whatever. And I think that's because men have probably created an environment for them that if they if they shy away from advances or say no, they're like, well, what the fuck is your problem? And if that's the reaction men have, that's not good. Right. You know what I mean? And I think that's where people just have to realize, look, we're entering a new era, right, where a lot of the things that were like, you know, seemed acceptable or whatever are not. We're trying to evolve. We're trying to say like, hey, if a woman asks you respectfully to say, I'm not comfortable moving at this speed, then you as a man, as a modern evolved human should be like, I respect that. That's cool. Let's just we go as fast as everybody can agree to.
Right.
But I think that's something too that men have to begin respecting, is sort of not seeing as like, you know, being able to pick up if they say no, not like, well, no right now. Let me see what happens in 20 minutes.
Right.
Just being able to be like, all right, it's done. Because the opposite effect is if you keep pushing, then you are going to make this woman uncomfortable.
Right.
And that person will probably not want to date you subsequently. Mm-hmm. You have right. to, I guess part of it is understanding that this is, that we have to take people's words seriously too. Like if someone's asked saying no, just be like, then that's it. Like, you know, put your raging boner away, try and act like a fucking human.
But fine, I guess I'll put my raging boner.
But yeah, like, but I'm saying like the porn aspect has like the putting the fingers in the mouth and like, where you want me to fuck you? Like that kind of stuff will like reeked of the guy who watches a lot of porn, and is like, oh,
learned about sex from porn.
Yeah, exactly. Like your your first interactions or learning how to be intimate with women, your examples are just hardcore pornography.
Right.
And that can taint you.
And as a famous person, I can imagine that he's not used to people sort of disabusing him of that notion, you know? Mm-hmm. And when she did, he was surprised, but I don't know. His apology also is something that got brought up a lot when in conversations you were having over the weekend. And I mean, I think just Dan Harmon gave a really detailed apology last week that, you know, I think a lot of people in the Me Too movement kind of looked at and were like,
that's the standard.
That's how you should apologize for something that is, you know, not super clear cut. I would just say, like, with the Aziz thing, like, that seems like, you know, we should obviously give him a chance to do that, but it is you should read both statements.
I think the Dan Harmon thing was a little more clear cut, though. And part of it, too, is, like, we can't force an apology, because the true apology, like, which I think Megan Gans was the writer.
Yeah,
And she made a statement on it. And the reason she accepted his apology wasn't because he apologized, was because she felt he actually did learn the lesson and she felt vindicated.
Right.
So I think when we try to get these men to apologize early, they try to say the right thing so that they can work again. But they're not actually learning and they're not actually sorry.
Right.
And I don't think Aziz is in a place where he's sorry. So if he says something now, I wouldn't buy it. But Dan's statement about working through his issues and actually understanding what they were and how it was a different time of his life, it doesn't make it okay, but you can tell he actually understood how he hurt people and did work through that.
Right, because people aren't just seeking apologies, right? You want to demonstrate that you have grown and you will not repeat the behavior, because you're demonstrating the self-awareness to know, this is what I did was shitty because I know now because of these things.
Yeah.
When you just say, oh, I'm really sorry, that's just like when you're just trying to get when your mom does something like, oh, you better say sorry. And you just say sorry because you want to move on with it. Like, yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But for these kinds of instances, you have to show some kind of growth or self-awareness for people that, like you say, to demonstrate that, okay, this person understands. It's not just boilerplate apology. It's that there is an awareness coming from what they do.
I once got a text from an ex. I was just like, I'm sorry for everything. And I was like, oh, for what? Can you elaborate?
Right.
He was like, oh, it's just for everything. I guess if you're not ready to forgive me, then we can have this conversation later. And I was like, well, I don't know.
Bro.
You could have been any number of specific things you did.
Right.
But it just read as like someone who didn't want to feel like I was still mad and just wanted to be like, we're cool, right?
I said sorry.
Yeah. Right. And so I think that's, I don't know. I'm not looking for those types of apologies. Like James Franco, I don't know if you saw his interview with, which late night guy was
Seth Meyers or Colbert.
Yeah, it was maybe Seth Meyers, where he was confronted about it. And
he was confronted, I think, on both. I mean, Colbert was the first one.
Then. And he had a really terrible reaction because he said all the right things, but then you can poke so many holes in it. Like, he was like, I don't know why these women would say that. And, you know, I respect them. It's like, well, if that was true, why didn't you, you know, publicly respond or let's call them up? Like, he's afraid to actually talk about it because he is guilty.
So. Right.
Right. Yeah, that seems to be the difference. Is Dan Harmon acknowledged what he did was wrong, like saw it from the other people's perspective, whereas I feel like the Aziz and James Franco sort of statements are them reaffirming what it looked like from their point of view and then just like giving a blanket, but I support the movement. And it's like that, I feel like that doesn't really reflect any improvement or any actual grappling with what is happening.
Right. This is I think it's just a very important moment for this whole like sea change that's occurring, right? Because now we're having the more nuanced discussions. Before, these people off top were like just unequivocally just terrible people. Like you just knew like, oh, that's a rapist. That's right. Someone. This is, if we're just going to take it, you know, on the facts that we know without considering what other history there might be. And it's just like, this guy was an example of how to act like a shitty guy on a date.
Right.
Then do they deserve to be lumped in with this? Probably not. But again, I think the moment too is to, we want a cultural shift in the end, right? Like all these, any movement about like change is about changing culture and changing the, like, you know, the way justice is administered and things like that. And I guess I wonder, is that the next step? Because the shitty men in media list, you know, she sort of touched on like why there's a need for this and things like that. But eventually, like, the discussion has to be on like our own judicial system too, right? And how to like mediate things like this that isn't just done sort of through social media or whatever.
There's also resistance, I think, to this particular story because I think a lot of women, almost everybody I know, I'm sure, has had an experience like this. And a lot of us don't want to look at it as a serious thing because, like,
yeah,
you kind of separate it from the more serious things. And then if all of a sudden something like this is something we're supposed to be really, really upset about, then I have to go back through my entire life and be like, well, have I ever had a good experience?
Right.
Like, and so I think a lot of women are resistant to labeling this or putting this in the Me Too movement because they don't want to feel that – they don't want to go back and, like, rewrite their past, essentially.
Right.
You know? And some of them may be in relationships with men who act this way.
Yeah.
I don't think the men should act this way, but, you know, it definitely shifts your entire life if you've grown up knowing something.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know – We're trying to evolve, right?
Yeah.
As people. Right. And
the weirdest thing to me is that Aziz really felt like he knew what he wasn't supposed to do. So maybe that's like, that was the most annoying part on him. Like, he kind of made sure not to cross the line and say all the right things.
Yeah, but he was walking a tightrope.
Right.
Of...
Like, he's like taking advantage of the system. But it's like, okay, if you hire a babysitter and you want someone who doesn't murder your kids, but what if your babysitter's like, I'm not a murderer, but just checking, is it cool if I light the kids on fire?
Right.
And you're like, no. And why would you say that? And they're like, I knew that. I just want to check.
Yeah.
Right. Would you hire that person?
Right.
You probably prefer a person who's like, I'm just a good babysitter.
Right,
I don't
right,
have
right.
to ask.
I don't have weird questions.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know. Like, there's definitely people who are dancing along the lines. And
right.
I'd rather we all just, like, move into safe territory.
And then he's like, dousing your kids in lighter fluid and being has the lighter and he's like,
no good.
So is it not good? You said no, right?
Yeah, I knew that though.
Right.
So, so I'm not a murderer.
Right.
But yeah, this is why I think this is one of the toughest discussions we've had to have too in around it. Cause it's so nuanced and it's forcing like the next step of discussion is like, where do we go from here? Like how are we going to change it? So we're in a world where HR and like the police don't fail women either.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think that's a bigger conversation that we should probably have soon about like what is wrong with the
actual
systems for adjudicating this. Not like we as a culture, but we should talk about that on the podcast. We've kind of talked around it and been like, and we need to do this way because the legal system doesn't work and HR doesn't work. And we've kind of mentioned it.
Right.
In passing on other episodes, but we should also
because yeah, the way it
that.
Works now, most women are inclined to believe that they going to the police isn't a good thing, or
right.
trying to go to the court will not get the outcome that
right.
is needed.
Right.
And I think that's troublesome too.
Let's just make penises like those credit cards with chips in them so that they can just never figure it out and they can't like you have to like enter a pin to like have sex and
or is it like a sorcerer so you could like summon a penis? You're like that's how you I don't know what the fuck we're going with this. Yeah.
Wait, who can never figure it out? The men can never
put a password. I don't know, make it
password protected
penis. No, I wanna examine this idea. What?
Encrypt your penises. You guys love Bitcoin,
encrypted
right?
Penis. Yeah. Men love Bitcoin.
Put it on the blockchain.
Right, to use it sexually, you need to put in the code from the other person involved in the scenario to be like, yes, I'm unlocking the penis for use.
Right.
Otherwise, like, it's got to stay in the case.
Mm-hmm. Everyone has to be accountable for your penis.
Sort of like the guns with combination locks.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That's a great idea.
See, guys, we're changing the world already.
And meanwhile, the president... had an affair with a porn star, tried to have a threesome with another porn star the year after he got married and while his wife was pregnant.
Probably pregnant, right? Yeah.
And nobody gives a shit because they're like, oh, yeah, well, we kind of.
But he's racist right now. Right, we already put the sexual assault thing to bed or just sex deviant to bed because now we're on shithole.
Right. But,
well, now we're seeing that so many people are like that. So it's like maybe they do relate to him.
Right.
Yeah. If this was a Democrat, I mean, we wouldn't – this would be the only thing in the news.
Yeah.
Both on Fox News and also, like, the New York Times would be covering it. CNN would be covering it. It would be top front page news if a Democratic president had any sort of situation like this.
But we can't get lower, right? I mean, we've already done racism and sexual assault. I guess murder –
right.
Is the next one where they will have to like laugh off murder. They're like, he didn't kill that guy.
Right.
That guy got in front of a bullet that he shot at him.
Right.
It's just interesting to see all the logic. And even like Sarah Huckabee Sanders today trying to justify the racist shit where she was like, well, if he was racist, how come he had a TV show on NBC? And how come these people asked him for money? It's like, could it be that the whole system is racist? Could that be? I don't know.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. Other than the president's affair with Stormy Daniels, is that?
Mm-hmm.
Stormy Daniels. What a name.
That's not even a good porno name.
I know. Alana Evans is another porn star who Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels called up and were like, hey, come hang out with us in our hotel room at the Trump American Century Celebrity Golf Championship in Lake Tahoe. But beyond that, we have...
Wait, hold on. Wasn't Stormy Daniels and Alana Davis, they were there because they were doing promotional shit for a company?
I don't know. I don't know.
That's what I read in this other thing. So his like celebrity golf tournament had like Wicked Entertainment had a booth there.
Oh, really?
Which is why they were even there. So those are the kind of people who are setting up shop at your celebrity golf tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Already, that's kind of weird. Anyway, but I'll leave that there. Because like in the photo of them from apparently that weekend, you can see like a Wicked Pictures like step and repeat behind them.
Is that the name of the porn company?
Like the porn company. So... clearly a porn company was invited to participate in this or like some kind of festivities around it. Right.
Right.
Anyway, that's just something to think about.
I know that there's also always like porn conventions happening alongside more like quote legitimate events.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That used to be, what's the,
CES?
Yeah, CES they always have the used same to one. Have this, like CES used to happen at the exact same weekend in Vegas as like the main porn thing because
like adult con?
The overlap of like internet users.
Right, because porn basically drove,
technology.
Innovation and technology.
That's true.
So, they like had a sort of informal agreement that they would have their conventions.
Like
at the
Blu-ray
same time.
Beat HD DVD because of porn, right?
Yes.
Like, because I remember people were like, oh, HD DVD. And then they're like, Blu-ray.
Right.
And then between porn and PlayStation, they picked a side. And then like, Blu-ray became king.
Yeah. And the rest is history. But we wanted to talk about this new edit of Star Wars, Last Jedi, the defeminized fan edit, aka the chauvinist cut,
which is the actual how the guy titled it.
Yep,
yep.
and he basically cut all the strong female characters out of the Last Jedi, and in fact, he also cut down, like, you can't cut Rey completely out of it, since she's like the protagonist, but he like cut scenes where she was shown having like really impressive abilities to make her seem less impressive, which just seems like so weird. There's also racism. He quote deleted quote China girl from the bombing scene at the very beginning. And he cut Laura Dern's character so that, and made the cut so that Oscar Isaac's character
has a real heroic
death. He like sacrifices himself to win the day.
Sounds like a great guy.
What's crazy is the guy even admits like this is unwatchable. Just so you know. Like he knows how bad it is. It's like, why did you even go through the trouble of making this? Because what? It's a 152 minute film cut down to 46 minutes.
Is he doing it like a joke to make fun of like men complaining, or is he doing it because he hates the woman in it?
I'm pretty sure this is a guy who does not. He's like straight up men's rights activist. Oh, who's like, this is how it should be. Like a terrible film. I'm not even sure what his goal is here.
He's like, the real world isn't great enough for men. The fantasies I have to right. have more men in them.
Right. But that is the world that we exist in, where it's like, wait, is this perfect satire or reality?
Right.
Because like the two are really hard to tell apart. Because
he also does it like from a bootleg like copy where the dude brought the camcorder into the theater.
Yeah.
So it's already unwatchable.
Yeah. And our writer JM pointed out that the very first Star Wars opens with a strong female character standing up to the villain.
Right.
So if you were to cut like strong women out of the original Star Wars, it would have been the story of, you know, Luke Skywalker's.
Yeah, but see, I didn't have the internet back then, so I could puff my chest out and be like, fucking women.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a different time.
You always talk about how insulted you were by Leia standing up, not knowing her place in that first movie. Yeah, but the entire story is put into motion by Princess Leia standing up to the Empire.
But context isn't, or history isn't important to these people.
Right. It is. I didn't read the New York Times piece, but I saw it. apparently, so Kathleen Kennedy founded the story group, the group that is in charge of like developing all
the
Star Wars
right?
stories. Yeah. Like basically the entire universe when she succeeded George Lucas as president in 2012 of Lucasfilm. And she put Keri Hart, a former film and TV writer, in charge of the unit. And, her first move was to make the story group entirely female, starting with Rainn Roberts and Carrie Beck. So I don't know. That's that is cool that there is sort of a feminist bent to the story group and the people who are developing the stories.
I'm surprised that hasn't gotten like more Star Wars idiot men's rights people aren't like up in arms about that. They're like focused on like this one. Do they know that? Do they know that? Like,
I don't think they read.
Yeah,
New
right.
York Times
They'd
articles.
Have a fucking meltdown.
Right.
What the fuck?
Yeah. All right, that is all the time we have. Teresa, it's been a pleasure having you, as always. Where can people find you, follow you?
I'm on Twitter at Larissa T, LeResaTee. Oh, I have a stand-up show every Sunday night
there you go,
at The
let
Friend.
Them
if you live in L.A., you should come to it.
At the what?
The Friend. At Comedy at The Friend on Instagram.
All right. Miles, where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Great.
You can follow me at Jack _ O'Brien on Twitter. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter, at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page that is The Daily Zeitgeist. And we have a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and footnotes, where we link off to sources for all of the stuff we talked about today. We just launched How Stuff Works Comedy's first non-Daily Zeitgeist podcast, Culture King, with Carl Tart, Edgar Montplaisir, and Jacques Neal. Some fan favorites from the Daily Zeitgeist have a podcast that is wonderful. It's outstanding. You should go check it out. And Miles, do you have a song to play us out on?
Yeah, I do. Just to go out, I want to play a really dope cover of the Tame Impala song Let It Happen by Meg Mack. This is from Like a Version, which is like a dope YouTube series where you can watch artists do covers of other songs. She does a very like downbeat version of Tame Impala song, and I think it's dope. So y'all should check that out.
So we're going to ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then.
Yeah.